My game of internet hearts yet. Hold on. Ah! All right. Good. All right. Got it. Internet hearts. I love playing. Internet hearts. Good evening. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Thank you very much for tuning in. Stick around as long as you can. And, I'll certainly understand when you have to leave. Hey, remember, Sylvia sent this to me. She writes, remember the Rahm-Emanuel confrontation in the House locker room with Anthony Weiner? I do, Sylvia, vaguely. She writes, maybe some Republican House member, if you'll pardon the expression, had a cell phone in the locker room and caught Anthony Weiner unawares, at least caught his underwear. Seems like a logical explanation to me. Who knows texting from sexting? Weiner is a strong advocate for progressivism, and the right would love to see him taken down. Sylvia. Yeah, I think this whole thing is just ridiculous, so that's all I'm going to say. Thanks, Sylvia. I had a rough day today. I had a very bad day. I only mention it because I think the thing that made this a rough day for me is probably the same thing that has been eating on you. And maybe you don't talk about it a whole lot. But I know it has to be bothering you. And it really got to me today. Word came out about the overall course the economy seems to be taking. And it's plunging deeper into depression. You know, joblessness is not at the level it was during the Great Depression, but everything else just seems to be to be going straight to hell. And what's involved here is everybody's future. Now, I will grant you that perhaps our society needs a punch in the jaw to wake us up that the way to live is not to be these over-consuming psycho freaks that we have been for a number of decades. Okay, fair enough. But that's not really what's happening. What's happening is people below a certain line in the population are suffering. The people above that line are having just an absolute party. Things couldn't be better. Now, above that line is about, say, 10-12% of the population. Below that line is the other 88-90% of the population. Most of us who are really, really concerned about what is in the immediate future, especially if you have young children in your family. Your sons, your daughters, your nieces, nephews, whatever, your grandparents, your grandkids, whatever. Just every time I read something in the business section of the Times, the Post, L.A. Times, Miami Herald, whatever the paper is, you know, it's just worse and worse and worse. The housing situation is just unbelievably bad. And it is not getting better. And I think a lot of economists now, or at least housing experts, are starting to, I'm talking about us below that line, the 88, 90% of us who go from what's left of the middle class all the way down to the unemployed people who are struggling just to find a place to live. I'm not talking about the 10-12% above that line who couldn't care less. They don't give a goddamn about the other 88-90%. Couldn't care less. And for them, everything is just going along great. But back to the housing situation. For the first time in a very long time, I think, I don't know, I don't have the stats right in front of me. I can't, you know, I've said before, if you come to this program to get educated, you're going to be sorely abused and misused. We're not here to educate. We're here to chat. As far as I know, in my experience, I can't think of another time when all of a sudden it makes more sense to rent a place to live than to own in much of the country. And the reason for that is because housing prices, or the price of how the cost of housing, buying a house, I should say, home prices continue to plunge. They can just continue. And I think one of the things that is disturbing to me in our kind of scattered neighborhood out here, another bank foreclosure. I can stand on our street and fire a shotgun three or four different ways and hit all kinds of houses that are in foreclosure. I was driving down the street the other day, and the first sign in our neighborhood, I don't know what it's like in your neighborhood, is the grass isn't mowed. That's the first sign. Uh-oh, grass isn't mowed. Not that we have a bunch of lawn freaks in our neighborhood, because we don't. You know, everybody just tries to keep their house nice and neat outside, keep the lawn mowed, plant some flowers, some roses, take down the trees that are about to collapse on somebody's house. So I'm driving down the street the other day, and there are a couple of guys in uniforms, painters' uniforms, with face masks. You know, they're going into this house to paint. And I noticed that the grass needs mowing. How did I miss it? How did I miss it the past three or four days? I don't know. So I pulled over and rolled the window down and said, you know, hey, is that house empty now? Yep. Is that a foreclosure? Yep. And then I noticed the little thing in the window, you know, a little notice. And now, granted, Atlanta is one of the hardest hit areas for this to happen. And the county I happen to live in is one of the hardest hit in Metro Atlanta for home foreclosures and people who really got screwed. And screwed they got by this predatory housing, banking, financial, lending monolith that just devoured people, just ate them up, chewed them up and spit them out. So, you know, that was kind of the start to the day, and had some business in Atlanta today, driving through some of the neighborhoods, unmowed lawns. And come back home for a third cup of coffee, read the business section about how the housing market is continuing to plunge. And now, the people who know, I guess, I mean, who knows, really, but now the word is that, okay, the housing market still has further to fall, and it's not going to start back up. What's going to happen, it's going to hit bottom, maybe by 2014, and then kind of bump along the bottom for who knows how long. Now, I'm not dis-acknowledging, how's that for a word? That the housing market was way inflated. I mean, when we left Atlanta in 97 and went to Chicago, you could buy a house for $130,000. We came back 4 years later, and same house was over $300,000. Insane. Just total insanity. And it continued to go up until about 2007, 2008. And then, wham, the bottom fell out. So it's going to keep falling. And I look at that, and then I look at the job market, and then I look at these reports we've talked about in this program, the college graduates. The average college graduate in the past 2 years, 2009, 2010, the average, not the median, the average income of college graduates, $30,000. It just doesn't seem to want to stop. And we look to Washington for some relief. The executive branch, the legislative branch, come on, that's why we send you people there. And what are we getting? You know what we're getting. I can't say it on the air. The hour. We don't have any sponsors this hour. We don't have any all night. Oh, okay. Slow night, huh? All right. So, you know, getting all morose and worried about this stuff, and I usually can talk myself out of it. It was much easier to talk myself out of this kind of attitude back in the day when I didn't have a 6-year-old. You know what I'm saying? My son Chris, who turns 33 this December, he and I spent the 80s and part of the 90s together, just he and I. And, you know, I'd have a girlfriend now and then. But we just rented. I had my little telemarketing job or writing job or going in on weekends occasionally to do some editing work at CNN or something like that. But, you know, just kind of put together enough money to pay the rent. Chris and I go camping up in the mountains. You just hang out. And it was, you know, it was kind of laid back. It was very irresponsible lifestyle. But I'll tell you what, you know, he graduated university. I'm afraid I haven't mentioned yet. I'll go ahead and mention. He graduated from the University of South Carolina. Yeah, he did. But I didn't, for some reason, when Chris was 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, you know, I didn't worry too much about it. Didn't worry about all the craziness that was going on. And I was working in radio then off and on too, you know. But it seemed like things were much, much different. And they were. They genuinely were. The storm clouds were gathering. But it was a little bit easier to live. It was back then. So I don't know. You know, all this stuff that's going on. Try getting through, I don't know if any of you subscribe to New York Times, but just try getting through the A section one day without, you know, without wanting to open a vein. Go ahead. Especially when you look at the international stuff. I keep trying to say to myself, hey, international stuff doesn't affect me. You're right. So, you know, I go swim my laps, and I come back, and I think, well, that usually does it. You know, you get some exercise, some intense exercise, and get your heart rate up, and yada yada. You come home, and you're going to be okay. So I come in, and for some reason, took a look at this article in the Orlando Sentinel from is today the 2nd? It's from today. Here's the article. Members of Orlando Food Not Bombs, that's a peace organization, were arrested yesterday when police said they violated a city ordinance by feeding the homeless in a public park. Jessica Cross, 24, Benjamin Markison, 49, and Jonathan McHenry, 54, were arrested at 6 p.m. on a charge of violating the ordinance restricting group feedings in public parks. McHenry, the oldest of the three, is a co-founder of the International Food Not Bombs movement, which began in the early 1980s. The group lost a court battle in April, clearing the way for the city to enforce the ordinance. It requires groups to obtain a permit and limits each group to 2 permits per year for each park within a 2-mile radius of City Hall in Orlando. Arrest papers state that these three helped feed 40 people Wednesday night. 40. The ordinance applies to feedings of more than 25 people. They were 15 over. A spokesperson for the Orlando Police said, quote, they intentionally violated the statute by feeding 40 instead of 25. And when I read that, you know, you know where I'm going with this, don't you? Of course you do. I'm thinking about the Christian avatar, you know, the Lord Jesus Christ. And I just wonder if he would have been feeding the homeless in Orlando. I wonder what the restrictions would have been. What would they have done to him? Probably the same thing they did to Jessica Cross, Benjamin Markison, and Jonathan McHenry. Now, there's more on this story, so stick around.
Before the hour,
and if you're listening online, I'm playing a CD from the same label, from the other night. The groups that, I'm drawing a blank on their name. But the group you're listening to tonight is the Dudes Abide. The Dudes Abide, and it's put up, it's on the same label, SeventhHeaven.com. And apparently this label is really, really, really putting out what I think are some good bands, some good music. So this group is The Dudes Abide. And last night, of course, it was Primetime Hero. Was that last night? And one day last week, I think, Primetime Heroes. So here's another one on Seventh Heaven Records. And you can go to their website, SeventhHeaven.com. The Dudes Abide. And you know what that's from. According to the Big Lebowski. What are you talking about? Okay. Orlando, Food Not Bombs, a peace group that actually does something, their form of protest is to feed hungry people, homeless people, in much the same way that the Christian avatar did. But the city of Orlando doesn't like that. Orlando, if you've never been there, trust me on this. Orlando, for the most part, it has the slums, but out of the slums are all those workers that, that's where all the workers come from, who work for $10 an hour to run all the attractions in Orlando, so that when people come to Orlando, you know, big destination city, you take your family and go to the hottest spot in America, temperature-wise, other than the desert Southwest, and you get on these stupid-ass rides. It's the most commercial, phony section of the country you can imagine. And I'm talking just about Disney World. I'm also talking about all of them down there. Sea World, where you see huge creatures that belong out in the open ocean living inside of a swimming pool where they do tricks for fish. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. But the Orlando City Council and the power in Orlando do not like the fact that Food Not Bombs will give away free food to people who are homeless and hungry. That's not the Christian thing to do. The Christian thing to do is open up another goddamn theme park. That's the Christian thing to do. Make a Jesus land or something. But don't be having homeless people congregate in our public parks. Holy hell, somebody from Minneapolis may drive into town to take their kid to Disney World and see homeless people eating. What could be worse? So they passed an ordinance. Very complicated. Groups have to obtain a permit to feed hungry people. And each group that gets a permit can only get two permits a year for each park within a two-mile radius of City Hall. Oh, okay, so I what? Food Not Bombs? They get out there with some kind of a pedometer or something, and they mark, okay, are we 2 miles from City Hall? Oh, okay. You bastards. So the cops moved in and arrested the three people with Food Not Bombs in Orlando. And a spokesperson for the Orlando police said they intentionally violated the statute. And the way they did it, they fed 40 people instead of 25. If they would have only fed 25, perhaps they wouldn't have been arrested. Oh, and police waited until everyone was served before making the arrests. Well, that was very Christian of them. I mean, I got to give them that. They didn't move in while the hungry, homeless people were being served. They wait until after they're being served. Then they go in and arrest three people from Food Not Bombs. Douglas Coleman, speaking for Orlando Food Not Bombs, said, quote, "They basically carted them off to jail for feeding hungry people. For them to regulate a time and place for free speech and to share food, that is unacceptable." End quote. Douglas Coleman, Orlando Food Not Bombs. It's unacceptable. To whom, Douglas, is it unacceptable? Obviously, it is very acceptable to the power in Orlando. So acceptable that they took it to court. And they got a ruling. And the court said, oh yeah, you can do that. Kick these sons of bitches out of the way. We got business to do in Orlando! Orlando Food Not Bombs have been feeding the homeless breakfast on Mondays for several years and dinner on Wednesday for 5 years. Oh, for Christ's sake. Breakfast on Mondays and dinner on Wednesdays. Too much for the city of Orlando. Can't handle it. Police had not enforced the ordinance while the court battle continued. The U.S. District Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit in Atlanta ruled that city rules regulating how often groups of people can be fed in a park do not violate the Constitution. No, they don't. So the rules stand. If there are 26 people and you feed the 26th one, your ass is going to jail. What if it's a three-year-old? Tough! Little bastard should never have been born. Where's his irresponsible parents? Eat your bootstraps. The penalty for violating Orlando's ordinance is 60 days in jail, a $500 fine, or both. Arrest documents state that Orlando Food Not Bombs received permits and fed more than 25 homeless people at Lake Eola Park on May 18th and May 23rd. On May 25th, Orlando Food Not Bombs illegally fed a large group of homeless people, the police report states. The group on its website called for members to show up that day and defy the city ordinance and feed people. You bunch of goddamn lawbreakers, right? That's how the cops look at them. That's how the 11th Circuit looks at them. That's how the city of Orlando looks at them. Lawbreakers. Lawbreakers. Now, this is Florida. Where are hungry people supposed to go? Do you know what percentage of homeless, hungry people is veterans? What percentage is single mothers with children? Officers said they found a press release on Benjamin Markison, 49, one of the people arrested. They found a press release on him when they arrested him stating that group members planned to defy the ordinance on Wednesday and feed people. Oh, the dirty communist bastards, right? They're going to feed people. And they did. And they got busted. And they had a press release. That makes it even worse. What are you trying to do, boys and girl? Embarrass Orlando? We're in the business of families down here, not these homeless scum. We want people to come down here and spend $8 for a goddamn hot dog. And you're feeding people in the park? Homeless people? Bail was set for $250 for the three people arrested. Jessica Cross and Benjamin Markison were released from jail early Thursday. Jonathan McHenry says he will stay in jail and let the legal process take its course. I know this is not a news story. I know this has been happening. City after city after city has passed ordinances against people who are homeless, against people who are hungry. Those people are supposed to go off in a corner, away from public view, and die. God damn it, just curl up in an alley somewhere and die. The rats and the crows will come and pick your bones, and then we'll scoop up your remains and dump them in a ditch somewhere. But get the hell out of town. You are embarrassing us here in Orlando, or Atlanta, or Santa Monica, or Chicago, or Dallas, or Houston, or New York, or Columbus. 10 before the hour. Out in California, according to the Sacramento Bee, the state assembly passed today, passed one of the most controversial and intensely lobbied bills. It imposes rate regulation on health insurance. Rate regulation on health insurers. Now, I don't have the bill in front of me, but I understand what they're saying is, okay, we're going to have some rules on how much you can charge people for your health, their health insurance. And remember, health insurance companies are not there to insure your health. That's just what they're called. What they are there to do is to sell you a policy and then try to deny as much of the coverage that they claim they will pay in order to show a profit. They are in the profit business, not the health insurance business, period. So you right-wingers, you might as well just get over your ugly-ass selves and accept that. They're not there to help you. Republicans walked out of the chamber in protest when this bill was passed. Now, I want you to consider something. Democrats walk out, like in Wisconsin, when an attempt is made to destroy part of the social contract that has been in place in this country for decades. In Wisconsin, it was to destroy the collective bargaining power of unions and take away their retirement, take away their pensions. In other words, beat up on the unions. Now, if Scott Walker would have tried that 50 years ago, a couple of guys would have showed up at his house about 3 in the morning, dragged him outside, beat his ass until he could barely stand, and then say to him, "Don't ever mess with the union again." And he would have learned a lesson. But that was then. This is now. When Democrats walk out of the legislature, they walk out when an attempt is made to destroy part or all of the social contract. When Republicans walk out of a state legislature, it is when part or all of a social contract is being extended or enforced or developed, something that will apply to help people out. And then the Republicans get off their well-fed asses and walk out because they do not represent people. They represent corporations. Republican members of the California Assembly wanted to call a caucus to discuss the measure. A measure was introduced by Mike Feuer, from the Democrat from L.A., but the Speaker of the California Assembly refused to call a recess. Democrats then defeated a recess motion, with leaders saying the Republicans were only trying to stall long enough to kill the bill because of Friday's deadline for action. Oh, aren't they just twisty little bastards, these Republicans? Aren't they, every single one of them, in state legislatures, on a federal level, just twisty, sneaky little bastards? But you got to give them credit. They are there to represent their constituency. Capitalist, corporatist America. Not people. Never people. The Republicans, when the Speaker of the House of the Assembly in California decided to call a vote, the Republicans retreated to the Rules Committee room off the chamber and closed the door and put a chair under the doorknob so nobody could get to them. "We're going to sit in here. We're not coming out. You're not going to put regulations on the health insurance industry? No, no." You worms. With Republicans gone, the remaining Democrats conducted a brief debate with Mike Feuer arguing that regulation by the insurance commissioner is needed because health insurance rates are skyrocketing. And claims are falling. Are you aware of that? I read in the New York Times, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. insurance claims, health insurance claims are dropping. You know why? Because people can't afford to pay the copayment or the deductible. So they are foregoing treatment even though they have the health insurance. And as that is happening, these goddamn vampiric health insurance agencies are jacking up the rates. Strike while the iron is hot. Right, boys? So, health access groups and Insurance Commissioner Dave Jones had lobbied for the bill while health insurers, backed by business groups, oppose it. Backed by business groups. It's always the Chamber of Commerce. Business groups. Business groups. You dumb bastards, if Americans don't have any money left to go buy your cheesy-ass made-in-China products, you know you're going to go out of business? Isn't capitalism just wonderful? Doesn't it just offer such rewards for the people who get enmeshed in that particular system? Isn't it just great? Republicans ended their off-the-floor meeting about 30 minutes after the bill was passed. We're clearly still, I love the way the Sacramento Bee uses this word. I haven't seen this word in a long time. They were clearly still peeved. They were peeved about what they called unprecedented and disrespectful actions by their Democratic colleagues. How could you Democrat bastards have voted in favor of the people? What's wrong with you? We Republicans, we know who to vote for. In this instance, the insurance industry. Oh, you dirty, rotten Democrats. We'll be back. Stay with us. Just a little bit more on what happened in the California Assembly today. The Democrats decided to vote on imposing rate regulation on health insurers, and the Republicans all walked out in protest. As I pointed out, that's what Republicans do. They leave the chamber when the vote is about to be taken that will help people. Democrats leave the chamber, i.e. Wisconsin, when a vote is about to be taken, or one forced by a fascist governor, that will hurt people. That's the essential difference between these two political parties. Not that they're both not corrupt, they both are. But the essential difference is the Democrats will usually still pretend to be interested in the working class or the middle class. The Republicans do not play that charade. They just walk out. A postscript to this story. The Democrats, well, first of all, a Republican from Lake Elsinore, Kevin Jeffries, said, "I think you just saw the budget explode." To put a cap on or to impose rules regulating health insurance? That makes the budget explode? He said, "I think you just saw the budget explode. Over the stupidest reasons, the Speaker has decided, apparently, to disrespect the Republican leader and the Republican caucus, and I think there's going to be significant consequences for that." End quote. Don't they all sound like Eric Cantor? Wouldn't you like to just come up to them and say, look, I'll tell you what, look up there at the ceiling. There's a bird stuck up there. And when they look up there, reach around, unbuckle their belt, pull their pants down, and let them stand there. Pants them. I'm telling you, pants them. They're such jackasses, aren't they, these Republicans? Democrats said that they came back at this Kevin Jeffries from Lake Elsinore by pointing out that the Republicans returned to the chamber shortly before Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers paid a visit to the floor to be honored by a Republican from Linda, California, Assemblyman Dan Logue. So they all come back in time to get an autograph from a football player. A spokesperson for the speaker, John Perez, Democrat, said, quote, the Republicans walked out on their job and on the consumers of California, but managed to come back to work 30 minutes later when it was time to get autographs from a famous football player. Why, of course. Why, of course. Who believes that Republicans represent their constituents in the home district? Let me see some hands. No hands. Who believes that they only represent corporate interests? Oh, look at the hands go up. I won't even ask the question about the Democrats, though. Regarding the Food Not Bombs program in Orlando and the subsequent ordinances there and across the country, William in Hollywood writes, here in California, it's the same thing. You need a permit also. I heard Bob Kincaid bring this up today on his program. I have to ask, what sort of country is this when feeding people is a crime rather than a question of morality? It is so sick that these laws are even allowed to be written and worse, carried out. Yes, it's quite okay to poison the environment on every level one can imagine. And it's quite all right to bomb people. And it's quite okay to remain ignorant, hidden behind some belief system which actually promotes morality in the writings, you know, as in do unto others. Shame is not a strong enough word. William in Hollywood. Ay, 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 ay. Philip in Jackson, Mississippi, sent me an email today, this afternoon. And he wrote, Mike, I think I'm really losing it. I was just watching Mitt Romney on TV today. And it induced a squeamishness I have not experienced since the last time I saw this snake address an audience in 2008. There's something about him. Is it the fact that he looks like a snake? Is it his maintaining of those gruesome Leave It to Beaver mannerisms? Or is it the fact that come election time, so many Americans will take a short look at this man and say to themselves, wow, he looks like a president, and he believes in America. I think I'll vote for him. Mitt Romney will, Philip writes, be the Republican nominee for president. I have no doubt about that whatsoever. And that's why I'm afraid. He has the image of a president. And for too many American voters, that will be enough. Especially if the economy takes a turn for the worse. It's going to be pretty hard for that to happen, Philip. I wish I had a more sophisticated insight on this matter. But this is what I find swirling in my head at the moment. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on it, if any. Keep doing what you're doing. Listening to you every night is one of the few refuges I have for sanity because, alas, I live in Mississippi. Don't ask why. Philip in Jackson, Mississippi. I live in Georgia, Philip. And thank God for Mississippi. If it weren't for Mississippi, Georgia would be last in everything. So I get what you're saying. My thoughts on Romney. Yeah, he'll probably be the Republican nominee. Not that it matters, because I think Barack Obama is going to be reelected. But it's going to be fun watching these slime ball. And you know, Romney today saying what he was saying about Obama. I'm not a big Obama fan. If you're a regular listener to this program, you know that's the truth. But, you know, listening to Mitt Romney talking about how Obama's presidency has failed, and what did he say? 40% of everything is government controlled, and pretty soon it's going to be more than. I mean, Jesus Christ, don't these people ever come up with anything that applies to the middle class, the working class, to the country as a whole? Do they always have to aim for the feet of these goddamn teabaggers? Every single Republican. There is no Republican Party anymore. It is now the Teabag Party. That's it. Right wing. You know, I saw this this photograph. Romney was given a speech somewhere. Was it Romney? I think it was Romney. And the photograph was of the audience listening to him, the very rapt audience listening to him. And I looked at this picture for a good minute. The picture had about 30 people in the frame, in the shot, about 30 people. Every single one of them, if they had hair, had gray hair. These were all old people, older people, you know what I'm saying. Obviously, all of these folks, and obviously I may be wrong, obviously to me, every one of them was getting some kind of government payment, either Medicare or Social Security or a government-guaranteed pension or investments that were paying off because of government guarantees. And there they sat, listening to rhetoric saying that the government needs to balance the budget, and therefore the Republican Party is going to ride into town slashing and burning the very programs that these poor, miserable sons of bitches are sitting there enjoying. What do they think is going to happen? Do they think that the Social Security is going to be cut only for the Negroes? Only for the immigrants? Only for the Latinos? Only for the liberals? You dumb bastards. How can you be this abysmally stupid? How? How do you manage it? How do you manage it and still manage to feed yourself and go to the toilet? How do you manage it?
Deep down in my soul, words that I'm hearing are starting to get old. Feels like I'm starting all over again. The last 3 years were just pretend, and I said goodbye to you. Mike Malone.
Sure 21 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Another Glenn Beck listener. There are still some. You know, all the stuff you read about his audience is down 30%, so on and so forth. That means it's down to 3 million. but another Glenn Beck, listener, this one in Pensacola, Florida, allegedly opened fire at a seafood market after learning that they had run out of crawfish. Yeah, this guy, you'll see this picture. Go to TPM Muckraker or TPM Muckraker. TalkingPointsMemo.com if you want to see a picture of this wild-eyed geek. Yeah, that's a Glenn Beck listener, right? He's 42 years old, and he opened fire at the L&T Seafood Market with an AK-47 from the window of his, sure, pickup truck after he was told that they had sold out of crawfish on Sunday. Jesus, God. According to Pensacola News Journal, quote, Kelly allegedly called the seafood market to order crawfish and became incredibly irate when an employee said the store didn't have any, according to a sheriff's office report. From 4:50 p.m. to 5:20 p.m., Kelly called the market 11 times, according to the business caller ID. The later calls went unanswered because the business closed at 5. The next morning, employees found 11 bullet holes in the front of the store. When law enforcement tracked him down and tried to arrest him on foot, Larry Wayne Kelly attempted to hit them with his car. According to the Sheriff's Department, 4 loaded guns were found in Kelly's car, including a 12-gauge, a pistol, and a revolver. And the book, The Sociopath Next Door, was also found. Kelly told law enforcement that he is a sovereign citizen, by God. That's someone who believes that almost all forms of government in the U.S. are illegitimate. And that he doesn't have to follow the law. Don't you sons of bitches listen to Glenn Beck? The police say that he was charged with fleeing police, aggravated assault, and weapons violations. But he was soon released on a $32,000 bond. He was then arrested again on the same day and charged with firing at a building, firing from a vehicle, and criminal mischief. Where'd he get the $32,000? Well, nobody knows, but I'll tell you what, a lot of money in the methamphetamine business, right? If they went over to Larry Wayne Kelly's house, they might find a whole lab there, you know? As of Wednesday, Mr. Kelly was being held on $575,000 bond. The owner of the store told the newspaper that he had sold out of crawfish because it was a holiday weekend. But he was restocked by Wednesday. He said, if you don't have crawfish, you can get a crab or something else. Why is crawfish so important? Well, it's not, Mr. Store Owner. What's important to these people is Glenn Beck. Sovereign citizen. I'm a sovereign citizen. Sovereign citizen seems to mean the same thing as freaked out tweaker or something. Sovereign citizen. Yeah, well, you know. We ought to be sovereign citizens here, Kathy, make this company, Molloy Broadcasting, a sovereign corporation. And then declare war on the United States, surrender immediately, and then ask for some foreign aid. Ta-da! You realize what's going on? You have friends that are going to travel in Europe. We have some friends that are heading for the Czech Republic in a month or two. You know, just vacation. They're going to go to the Czech Republic. And they're going to travel around to some of the cities in the old Yugoslavia. And they're really looking forward to this trip because they've done a lot of travel, but they haven't been to Middle Europe, to this part of the continent. And we were talking about it the other night. Of course, I'm sitting there all jealous because... we can't afford to go to middle anything. But you know, they'll take a lot of pictures and probably email them while they're over there. But I feel like I need to call them up or drop by their house and tell them about what's going on with this unusually lethal strain of E. coli that is spreading across. Have you heard about this? We'll talk about it when we come back. Stay with us. I'll tell you now that they don't need us. Robin and Kenny.
Defining anger management. It's Michael Lawn.
Twenty-five before the hour. Apparently, approaching 2,000 people in Germany now have been infected with this unique strain of E. coli. Apparently it's not been seen before. And according to the Times, it threatened to touch off panic in Europe. It's a previously unknown super toxic variant. That's according to international health experts today. Super toxic. As much trouble as the European Union is in right now with the people who have a decent currency, well, they all have the same currency, but a decent economy, and the people who don't. And, of course, the countries that are struggling are stuck because they gave up the rights to their own currency when they joined the European Union. A couple of countries didn't, UK and I think a couple of Scandinavian countries. But this is all it takes to tip this fragile, now, union over on its ass. It's just, you know, this has been an idea for a long time, unified Europe. And they finally hammered it together. It was forced. It was kind of stupid to do it. We're seeing the result now. But as it is fraying and coming apart at the seams, now introduce a strain of E. coli that is unknown and there's no antibiotic to combat it. Russia has extended a ban on fresh vegetable imports from all of the EU. They started out with a ban on vegetables from Spain and Germany. But now Russia says, no, you're all trying to poison us Russians. European Union officials called that move, quote, disproportionate, end quote. That's kind of like disproportionate warfare. Right? You kill one of ours, we'll kill 78 of yours. In Geneva, The spokesman for the World Health Organization, where they are based, a spokesman for that organization said, quote, what we understand is this is a strain which has never been detected in an outbreak situation before, end quote. He said scientists at many laboratories are working to gather more information about the strain. The origins remain completely unknown, where this came from. A total of 10 countries have now reported cases, and a couple of Americans who had traveled in that part of Europe came back to this country and are in hospitals now. The only reason I bring this up, is because, you know, once again, we are looking at an infectious agent that nobody is sure where it came from, and to have it develop like this, just all of a sudden, what is it? Bacteriological warfare? Is somebody trying to send a message? In a statement today, a Chinese laboratory collaborating with German scientists said the contagion have been caused by a, quote, new strain of bacteria that is highly infectious and toxic, end quote. The lab, the Beijing Genomics Institute, in the southern city of Shenzhen, referred to the strain as, quote, entirely new and super toxic, end quote, saying it was similar to one that is found in the Central African Republic, but it's different. A bacteriologist at this medical center, University Medical Center in Hamburg, said that tests conducted had shown that the new strain was a hybrid that causes the virulent complication called hemolytic uremic syndrome, or hemolytic uremic syndrome, HUS, which attacks the kidneys and destroys them. So, you know, a couple of years ago, it was Ebola, and around the same time, Lassa fever, and, you know, these hemorrhagic, is that the way you say it? Hemorrhagic diseases, where your entire body starts to bleed internally and you die. And, what was the book that was so popular? I remember reading The Coming Plague or something, and the predictions were made. This is back in the early 90s that the end of the human species was at hand because of these infectious agents. And then, you know, they disappear from the news. It's not that they disappear from infecting people in Africa, but they disappear from the news. Everybody forgets about it. And then something like this comes up. And I'm not trying to be a real nasty person here, but 1,500 people in Germany infected and 16 dead, 17 dead, and all hell is breaking loose. And I guess it should be. But if the same numbers were mentioned from some country in Africa, nobody would pay too much attention to it, except maybe the medical community, that part of the medical community that feels incumbent to track these things down, try to figure out where they are until they reach the white people, you know, before they reach the white people. No? Am I being a little bit rancid about that? You think? But so many countries in Africa that threw off white colonial leadership and replaced it with black dictators who then just they didn't continue what the white colonialists did. They made it even worse. You know, the white colonials brought things like health care and education and roads and dams and bridges. Of course, no representation. And we're only here to exploit your natural resources and yada, yada, yada. But once the white colonials either left on their own or were thrown out, what replaced them was a black overlord class that was as violent as if they had come from a different planet. Consequently, for the past 30, 40 years, there has been nothing but disease, poverty, ignorance, death, and a population that continues to grow, believe it or not, in all these different African states. There are some exceptions. So the aftermath of colonialism was a dictator class that took over. Take a look at Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe. Rhodesia used to be a net exporter, one of the biggest exporters of food on the African continent. Now the nation is starving to death. And the guy who has been running the place, Mugabe, how old is he? Late 80s, early 90s? Ain't no way he's going to leave. He doesn't give a goddamn if millions of his countrymen die. He doesn't care. What a shame. But I digress. All the death and disease and poverty and sickness and lethality that walks hand in hand with kids and babies and middle-aged people in various countries in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa. It never stops. Something pops up, 10,000 people die, it pops down. But dear God, you have 17 people, and I'm not minimizing, I'm just comparing. I'm just making kind of a statement here. 17, 18 people die in Europe, and 1,500 are hospitalized, and the whole goddamn planet goes just, we got to find what this is! Quick! Right? So, I mean, is that not true? Am I saying something that is not true, or is that true? If it is true, does it mean anything? If it is not true, does it say something about my worldview? So we have a new strain of E. coli. 17, 18 people dead. 16 in Germany, and one from Sweden who visited Germany lately. 1,500, maybe it's up to 2,000 now, people hospitalized. And the global medical community just goes completely, you know, code red about all this. White people don't like it when white people get sick. You know what I'm saying? It's something they don't understand. I don't know. That's my opinion anyway. Before the hour, got an email from Jude with the organization out in Seattle, Women Standing, another peace organization, Peace and Justice. Who's the little creep that was the brains behind the Christian Coalition? Oh yeah, Ralph Reed. Who has a home or had a home here so he could run for lieutenant governor. Of course, he didn't make it. Everybody thought he had, politically died and joined his political savior. But no, Ralph is back after his close encounter with Jack Abramoff, who is still in jail, I believe. Ralph Reed is a slimy little bastard, and what makes him real slimy is the fact that he has such a baby face. You know, he's got that little boy face. I swear to God, the man is in his 50s, and he looks like he's about 14, and he uses that. You know, he's not very tall, and when you see him, you just say, "Oh, what a cute little thing." Back in the 80s, when he was putting together the Christian Coalition, you know, for... to make more money for, Pat Robertson, you know, another Christ murderer, if ever there was one, Pat Robertson, what a real devil. So, Ralph Reed was only 28 at the time, 27, something like that, and just seen as a boy genius, yeah, going to go out there and do God's work, bring in the money. And he and Jack Abramoff got their testicles caught in the ringer when it was discovered that they were playing Native American tribes off against each other for, to get licenses or whatever they have to get to run gambling casinos. So Ralphie boy, the little smarmy-looking little fake Christian bastard, and Abramoff figured out a way to milk these people left and right. And they did. Oh, my God, did they. Well, Abramoff went to jail for something else. And Ralph Reed just kind of floated back into the shadows from whence he came and bided his time and then ran for governor and then lieutenant governor here in Georgia and then bided his time some more. He is a thief. He is a liar. If Jesus were here, Jesus would just pinch his head off, throw it into hell for the devils to play soccer with. Ralph Reed is one of those people. Just an evil hypocrite of the worst kind. Now he's put something together called Faith and Freedom Coalition. Faith and Freedom. It's another perverted, filthy perverted perversion of language and perversion of their stated goals. The faith and freedom is nothing about faith unless it's faith in a form of poisonous capitalism. It's not about freedom unless you're talking about Ralphie Boy's freedom to make millions more from the sheep so he can do whatever it is he does with his millions. But he's no more interested in Jesus than Jesus is interested in him. Of course, we're talking about one person here who's insane, Ralph Reed, and another one that doesn't exist, Jesus. But this weekend, or was it last weekend? I guess it was last weekend. Faith and Freedom Coalition Chairman Ralph Reed. Faith and Freedom Coalition. Faith and Freedom Coalition. They have a website. Check them out. FFCoalition.com. FF. You want to see something that will turn your stomach and make you realize how they have taken the body and soul of their Savior and turned it into dog dreck? You want to see something horrifying? Go to FFCoalition.com. Check it out. Look around. Listen to these animals. No offense to animals. Well, they are animals. And then go read your Bible a little bit. Go read your New Testament. Read where Jesus does the Sermon on the Mount. Go read that. Read about where Jesus warned his followers that which ye do to the least of these, my brothers, you do it to me. I was hungry, and you fed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you sat with me at my bedside. I was in prison, and you comforted me. You know, that kind of stuff. The kind of stuff that Ralph Reed would just urinate all over. Ah! What kind of Christianity is that? We like the muscular Christianity, the kind that's all about money and killing. That's our Christianity. Get your sick little weaselly wimpy Jesus out of here. We want the one with the big biceps. God, I hate these people. I just hate them. So last weekend, Ralph Reed, Governor Scott Walker, Senator Ron Johnson, Congressman Ribble from Wisconsin Dells, they all got together for the annual state GOP prayer breakfast. We all get together and have a Republican prayer breakfast. We are praying to Satan, but we still do it. And we don't have the decency to declare ourselves to be Satanists. We make you think that we are playing to God or Jesus. We are praying to the devil. Because what we are doing is destroying the Christian faith. We are destroying America. And ultimately each other. But it is such great fun! Ralph spoke to a crowd of more than 400 grassroots activists. Ralph stressed the importance of faith in politics and the need for faith-based and values voters to stay engaged in the political process. Yes, hallelujah. We need you to get out there and talk the talk, do the trash, do the scut work, make sure the money comes to me. Not this little chump change contribution crap that you people need to run yourselves. I'm talking about the big money. Like, you know, when the Redskins want, and I'm not talking about a football team, when they want to open up a casino, baby, that's what I'm talking about. the hour. This is the Molloy Program. One last thing here on the Freedom and Faith and Freedom Coalition. A new scam put together, a new Christ-murdering scam put together by Ralph Reed, former Boy Wonder of the Christian Coalition. God, he should have gone to prison with Abramoff? Jack Abramoff, that's right. Should have gone to prison with him. But, you know, he's out to shear the sheep again. It is probably no coincidence that they refer to the people they are shearing as sheep, taking care of the flock. Let's go flock the flock. It's just unbelievable. Wisconsin Faith and Freedom Coalition Chairman Tony Nasvik was also in attendance. I'm talking about this prayer breakfast where Ralph spoke to a crowd of more than 400 grassroots activists, and Scott Walker was there, and Ron Johnson, a state senator, and a Ribble, Congressman Ribble. So there they are in Wisconsin last weekend, or weekend before, and Ralph was giving his little pep talk and his let's go kill Jesus even more than we have. Let's go out there, and if you boys will just keep pushing, we will get the camel through the eye of the needle. We will do it, because we got to do that in order for any of us filthy bastards to ever get into heaven. But we'll do it. We'll just make a needle that has an eye 40 feet wide. By God, that'll get a camel through it. Don't try to give us something we can't handle, Jesus. We'll just make a big needle. Anyway, according to the press release, Wisconsin Faith and Freedom Coalition Chairman Tony Nasvik was also in attendance and held an organizational meeting prior to the prayer breakfast. Wisconsin Faith and Freedom Coalition members know that they live at ground zero in the fight against Obama's big government union agenda, and they will be ready to defeat it in 2012. What kind of a goddamn acid trip do these people live in? Obama's big government union agenda? Man! Somebody has dosed these freaks, or somebody should. Where's Abby Hoffman? Oh, that's right, he's dead. They suicided him, didn't they? And speaking of that E. coli that shows up in white countries in Europe, previously unknown bug. Does that sound like biowarfare to you? Possibly. I've had two people now write me over the last half hour. Sounds like biological warfare to me. Maybe just run a little experiment here. Let's see what happens. Here, release this into the general population. Here, I know, smear it on some cucumbers. Let's see what happens. You want to release it in Africa, some African country? Nah, nobody will give a goddamn. Let's release it in Germany. Then they'll pay attention. Germany's just full of white people. Oh, come on, Molloy. You're just so twisted. Speaking of Wisconsin and Scott Walker, did you hear about this? They have a health plan there called Badger Care. You know, it's not for badgers. It's for people who live at Wisconsin Badgers. University of Wisconsin, the state's Medicaid-funded family planning program, Badger Care. I mentioned University of Wisconsin because the story is about somebody who went to UW's campus healthcare center and applied for Badger Care. It's the state's Medicaid-funded family planning program, which reimburses low-income men and women for sexually transmitted disease testing, for birth control services, for cancer screenings, and other preventive reproductive care. Badger Care. The nearly 7,000 low-income Wisconsin men. Oh, my God, they're going after the men? The nearly 7,000 low-income Wisconsin men who use Badger Care may soon be out of luck. Scott Walker.
The state's governor
has proposed eliminating men entirely from the program in his latest budget bill. Now, if he does that, that'll cost Wisconsin all of its federal family planning funds, because you can't do that. You can't say we are going to eliminate one of the three or four genders here. We're going to eliminate the males. Three or four genders? What the hell is he talking about now, Marcia?
I don't know. It's just that goddamn Malloy. I have no idea.
So Scott Walker is going to roll the dice to satisfy the freaks in Wisconsin. I didn't realize Wisconsin had so many freaks. So many right-wing trolls. So many monstrous, Christ-murdering, hypocritical scumsuckers. I had no idea. I thought, I mean, my God, you all are almost as bad as Georgia, which is almost as bad as Mississippi, which is almost as bad as Arizona, which is almost as bad as Kentucky and Tennessee, which is almost as bad as Ohio. Wisconsin's Joint Finance Committee is currently finalizing, according to the Huffington Post, currently finalizing the language of the bill. In addition to cutting men out of Badger Care, it also includes provisions that increase the age restrictions for Badger Care eligibility. It also requires parental consent for all patients under 18. It reduces the eligibility limit down to 200% of the federal poverty line, and it cuts more than $1 million in state funds to Planned Parenthood. Huffington Post says Scott Walker's office did not respond to repeated requests for comment. But Pro-Life Wisconsin, amen, an anti-abortion advocacy group that officially endorsed Walker, Pro-Life Wisconsin told the Huffington Post it supports this move to cut men from the Badger Care Family Planning Program. The group Pro-Life Wisconsin believes that providing men with condoms and testing and sexual counseling doesn't really save the state any money. Matt Sand, legislative director for Pro-Life Wisconsin, said, quote, "The assumption is that if you get women on birth control, that would reduce Badger Care-funded births and save the state money. But how much are men contributing to those purported cost savings?" You dumb son of a bitch. Do you really have to ask the question? You see, oh, never mind. He goes on, less than 7,000 men use the program compared to 50,000 total patients. You're looking at a small percentage of the overall population. So it just seemed to a Republican legislator to be a gratuitous add-on that is not saving the state anything. How much are men contributing? Okay, sit down. Sit down, Pro-Life Wisconsin spokesman, legislative director, Mac Sand. Okay, sitting down. You see this? This is called a penis. Do you see this? This is called a vagina. Now, when you insert... Oh, never mind.
What you gonna do when the silence calls your name? What you gonna do when the silence calls your name? Make your speeches to the wind, count the votes that have been. What you gonna do when the silence falls? See that cloud in the eastern sky? See that cloud?
listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
So I will spare you the graphic description of human reproduction and also the very clear route of sexually transmitted diseases. They happen to use the same interstate. But Wisconsin, the governor of Wisconsin has decided that men don't need to be checked for anything. They don't need cancer screening. They don't need to be checked for transmittable sexually, that is, diseases. Nothing, no. So let's drop low-income Wisconsin men who use badger care. Abortion rights advocates in Wisconsin are convinced that this sociopathic governor and his partners in crime, the Republican lawmakers, are just looking for underhanded, politically acceptable ways to change the badger care program so significantly that the U.S. government is forced to cut all federal family planning funding to the state. Can you believe these sons of bitches? Wisconsin, are you going to let this happen? Are you? According to Huffington Post, badger care currently serves about 57,000 low-income Wisconsinites. That's according to Planned Parenthood. And the state's health department estimates that it prevents 11,000 plus unplanned pregnancies, or it did in 2008. Family planning advocates argue that if patients did not have access to preventive care, Wisconsin would see an increase in unintended pregnancies, the spread of STDs, and a rise in undetected and untreated cervical and breast cancer cases, all of which would then cost the state millions of dollars in future medical costs, not to mention the horror and the grief and the suffering and the pain and the anxiety and the depression and the confusion of the people who were not given a chance to be tested. But pro-life Wisconsin, the anti-abortion Christian group, that spokesperson, Sand, he argues that badger care services actually increase the rate of unintended pregnancies by, are you ready, encouraging teens to have sex. Now, what kind of a stupid son of a bitch believes that teenagers need encouragement to have sex? Mr. Sand, that's all they live for! The idea, you moron, is to prevent the little Janes and Johnnies from getting each other pregnant or giving each other diseases. Why are you so stupid? Why? Did you get some kind of weird, twisted potty training when you were a kid? Did mommy tell you your wee-wee was awfully tiny when you were six? What the hell is wrong with you? Mr. Sand said, Medicaid is a state program providing the free state funded birth control and condoms to 15, 16, and 17-year-olds, and that's a violation of parental rights. We oppose badger care program for that reason. Parental rights? Really? And also because of the fact that government-funded birth control increases pregnancies and promotes promiscuity. It has the opposite of its intended effect, and my wee-wee is not little, Mom! Wisconsin! Yo! Wake up!
It's a little reminiscent.
Oh, hello.
It's a little reminiscent of the Focus on the Phallus group that preached that little boys needed to be taken into the showers so they could see daddy's penis and know all was right with the universe.
And then they wouldn't turn. They wouldn't turn
then
into...
They wouldn't be gay.
Homosexuals!
Because everyone knows if you're a child, all you need to do is see a penis and you won't be gay.
Well, if you're a boy child, as long as it's daddy's penis, and then everything's okay. Wisconsin, what has happened to you? And if you're in Wisconsin, don't turn around and say, Malloy, what has happened to Georgia? Georgia's been in the toilet for, Jesus, I mean, generations. But Wisconsin? I guess I just had a false image of Wisconsin. Badger care, huh? Maybe they should rename it Beaver Care. We'll be right back. Taking calls now, 877-996-2556. We'll get to Blue in just a moment. He's in Papua New Guinea? Papua? How do you pronounce that? Papua New Guinea? Okay. In a minute. I get this email here from Mushroom Prospector. And it's regarding the this new E. coli strain that has shown up in Europe. And his email says, intestinal flora, that would be E. coli, grown in vats and shipped to every restaurant in the American market, European market, wherever. These microbes are sold to be poured into the kitchen sink of restaurants in order to eat out the grease traps and promote digestion in septic systems. Feedstock issues in the vats will tend to force microbes to mutate. Random mutation is normal too. And then he has... Before the text goes on, there's two posters for 12 Monkeys, the film. And then he continues, I sold this crap for a guy who matched the Brad Pitt character in 12 Monkeys. His father was at that time the head of American Chemical Corporation in New Jersey, which produced this nightmare waiting to happen of a product. Similarities with the movie abound. World Wildlife Federation themed posters at every cubbyhole, sales desk, staff hauntingly similar to characters in the film. Hard to imagine a more perfect scenario from which the real life contagion might originate. Thank God I get to witness it in my lifetime. At least the Republicans will be gone too. Woo! It's a rather cryptic but very interesting email here, Mushroom Prospector. Holy Toledo. Send some more. Love it. The 12 Monkeys. I saw that movie and it was just beyond me. just beyond me. Blue is in, how do you pronounce this, Papua New Guinea?
Well, it's a metropolis on the south coast of Papua New Guinea.
Papua, okay.
And actually, I'm up here on my own business. I'm not with the firm at the moment, but I just wanted you and all your listeners to know I've seen the error of my ways, Mike. I'm not going to rubbish Obama anymore.
You're not?
For one thing, it's apparently not fashionable for non-U.S. citizens to do that. So I've got a list of things that we can talk about when I call in that I never hear mentioned on your show.
Well, you might want to submit them to the committee.
Well, for example, did you know that Britney Spears' left breast is slightly larger than her right one? Never hear that mentioned. What happened the last time Lindsay Lohan was in rehab? I've never heard you talk about that.
I think she came out and just started doing drugs again.
And Elton John just had a baby. Well, he didn't actually have one, but you know what I'm talking about. He's got a baby now.
He does.
And I've got a story about Katie. What's her name? Katie Couric, is it?
Katie Couric, the former CBS.
I've got a story about Katie Couric's hemorrhoids that will blow your ratings right through the roof, mate. So what do you say? Oh, by the way, I want to say thank you to the young lady from, was it Oregon? Who wrote the very nice letter.
About me. Saying that she enjoyed hearing you?
Right, and I just want to say to her mum that I'm twice as tall and twice as good looking as Harrison Ford, Liam Neeson and Richard Gere all put together. And that if her mum wants to send me a picture of herself, just get in touch with you off the air. And you know, we can come to some arrangement.
But I don't have any pictures of you.
Well, you know, we can arrange that, Mike. Look, the other thing is that you were talking the other night about the floods in the Midwest in the United States.
Yeah.
And how there was a lack of response and a lack of money and so on. And I wanted to point out that, for example, in the Netherlands in 1953, when they had the huge flood in January and they broke the dikes and the whole southern half of the country was flooded, and the Dutch government, this was 8 years after the war, and they were still prostrate, they were rationing things, but the Dutch government managed to find housing and clothing and so on and shelter and food for those hundreds of thousands of people that were affected by the floods. And, of course, later people came in from, you know, from all parts of the world to help out. But this notion that the richest country in the world can't take care of its own citizens, you know, it's pretty ludicrous to the rest of us out here. I don't know whether any of that had been pointed out before, but...
many times. What has been pointed out is the ludicrousness of it all.
Exactly. And, you know, I was thinking the other day when I heard you talking about some of this stuff that back in the 2nd century AD, the Roman general Quintus was complaining to the emperor Marcus Aurelius that the Germanic tribes wouldn't lay down and roll over for the Roman legions. He said, you know, a people should know when they're conquered. And I was thinking that if Quintus was campaigning in the United States, he wouldn't have that problem. He'd know perfectly well the people knew they were conquered.
Well, that's very true. But did you see the movie Gladiator? It was a lot more involved than just they wouldn't roll over. They were massively butchered.
Well, you're talking about the Russell Crowe picture.
Yes, of course. That's one of your people.
Well, I don't know whether I'm willing to acknowledge Russell Crowe as one of my people, but...
I happen to have thoroughly enjoyed that movie.
Well, look, I like Ridley Scott as a director. And by the way, last night we were sitting around here. We were sitting in this little hotel here.
Yeah.
We've been up in the mountains all day. It's bloody cold, and I'm getting really too old for this kind of thing. We're recovering an old aircraft, a Japanese aircraft that's up in the hills north of here.
Yeah.
And we were sitting around watching a movie. I don't know whether you've seen this or not, but it's a picture called Tom Horn.
No.
And it's with Steve McQueen. I think it was one of the last pictures that he made about this poor bloke that was hired to clear up the rustling in Montana or Wyoming or someplace.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the corporate cattle barons that recruit him to do this, as soon as he's done his job, they get rid of him. They find him and murder him, you know. And I thought, you know, this is typical of what's going on.
Blue, that may be. Listen, I'm very curious here. I have a straight-up question, and I would appreciate a straight-up answer. Every time you call, whether it is in the northern hemisphere or the southern hemisphere, on this side of the international dateline or that side of the international dateline, no matter where you call from, there is never any delay in the transmission of my voice to yours or your voice to mine. A. B. The transmission itself is always perfectly clear. There is no interference whatsoever. The kind of interference that I may get on a phone call, say, from Minneapolis to the Atlanta area where our studio is. And I'm just curious about that. I have a feeling that there might be a possibility that you're actually an actor who lives in somewhere in Southern California, and this is something that you do, which is all right with me.
It's even worse than that. It's like one of your callers mentioned a few months ago.
You're in the basement, your mother's basement in
Kansas City, and of course, this is all facilitated by the fact that telephone transmissions are carried at the speed of light.
Right.
So there actually is a delay, Mike. It's just that you're not quite swift enough to catch it.
Is that what it is?
Is what's going on.
I see.
And the other thing that helps out with that is that I've got a battery of telephones. I've got about six telephones that I use when I'm traveling.
Yeah.
And
why is that?
Well, because some of those phones are not compatible with some of the servers in places we go.
Oh, well, I see. Okay, so.
So, for example, if I go to, I think I called you from Spitsbergen a while back. I actually had to borrow a phone from one of the blokes at the airport there because none of the phones I had were compatible with, I think it's Nortel or Northstar, whatever they call it there in Norway, the server. But I'm prepared to communicate from anywhere in the world. And by the way, when I call home, which I do, not infrequently, I occasionally get dropped, and I think I've been dropped from your program a couple of times as well. But I've very seldom had any problems with interference and so on. I'm assuming you get calls from other parts of the world as well.
Well, we do, Blue, but they're usually calls that are lacking the clarity, not necessarily in the conversation, but the clarity in the transmission. Listen, hear that music? That means I have to do commercials, which means I have to go. But I want you to call back any time. We'll be right back, folks. Just give the time and listen to music. It's late enough in the show, nobody's listening anyway, right? I never did get to the upcoming Double Dip recession, did I? Or the Tea Party now wants to do drug tests for everyone. I thought the teabaggers were these great civil libertarians. No, I never thought that. They are hypocritical slime cockroaches is what they are. But in Florida, remember random drug testing hasn't been a real big issue for the past few years. Remember that? I remember when I got hired by ABC, I had to go take a drug test, urine test. And the first thing I did was go by the local head shop and buy some of that vitamin B stuff. Woo! And drink it down. Make your urine go just electric! Well, I had to. So I went to the lab they sent me to, and the technician said, "Oh, my goodness. Very colorful urine." So about a week later, I got a phone call from the ABC person. They said, listen, there's been a slight problem here with your urine test. They have the wrong zip code. They have the wrong zip code. I said, oh, what should I do? Well, we want you to go take it again. Oh, okay. So I ran out to the head shop and just for, you know, insurance, got another bottle, those little dark bottles of that stuff. You open it up and there's this powder inside. Oh, my God. Yeah, it was. It was about $60 a bottle. So dumped it into a glass of fruit juice and did it a second time and then rushed out. And this time they got the zip code right and I got hired. Remember that, Kathy? They said they had the wrong zip code. What they were trying to say was, holy God, his test is positive.
No, it looked like antifreeze, which you were peeing out. It was the most unnatural color I've ever seen. It's like something out of a high school science experiment.
Well, you know. Anyway, I digress. So random blood tests kind of fell by the by. Remember, they just kind of went away. It hasn't been a big issue over the past decade. But Florida, the state run by this guy who should be in prison, Rick Scott, the governor there, involved, his company involved in one of the most massive Medicare frauds in the history of Medicare, in the history of the planet. But he's the governor, for Christ's sake. You know, isn't capitalism wonderful? Anyway, Florida is determined to bring back random drug testing. This past week, the legislature there adopted two new drug testing requirements, one imposed on welfare recipients. Why, hell yes. And the other on state employees. I guess that includes a member of the legislature, right, Rick? And even you. You're a state employee. The irony here, and this is also at Huffington Post, is that these quintessential illustrations of big government were promoted by the Tea Party and one of its darlings, Governor Rick Scott. Remember, the Tea Party was all about restoring limits on government, protecting our constitutional rights. Remember that? Remember that? And so many of these white-haired, white-skinned, dumb cockroach-voting bastards bought it. Yeah, let's do that. Let's change it. Let's get rid of what's it called, Obamacare. Just keep your government hands off my Medicare. I'll tell you right now, boy. The ignorance is just Mount Everest after Mount Everest of ignorance. U.S. Supreme Court has repeatedly held that government-mandated drug testing is a search governed by the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. That provision says, in part, the right of the people to be secure in their persons. In their persons. That includes your urine. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. Not, will not, shall not. There is a difference. Remember what your old English teacher told you. Shall means no time in the future. Will it be violated? And the Fourth Amendment mandates that government have probable cause before a search warrant is authorized. Random drug testing is what is known as a suspicionless search. Even without probable cause to believe the person required to pee in a cup has done anything wrong, he or she is forced to turn over body fluids for government inspection. Teabaggers! You lying, hypocritical, scum-eating cockroaches! Did I leave anything out there? I think the only difference between, there are two differences between Lawrence O'Donnell and me. He's on television, and I'm not, and never will be, and he doesn't use the kind of language I use, and never will. Other than that, I love Lawrence O'Donnell. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seeker. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.